Welcome to the Medical Abstinence Special Needs Workshop. My name is Jan D. I am a compulsive eater. And I'm just going to introduce the folks who are here, but they'll be introduced again as they're ready to do their shares. Suzanne E. and Paula N. Okay. I have a couple of announcements, disclaimers, whatever. First of all, please turn off all cell phones, which I will do. Also, please, I have to read this to you. Just a reminder that this workshop is being recorded. Once the workshop is recorded and reviewed by the WSO board or its delegates, it will be added to the CHOW website, where it will become part of the public domain. So if you do want to come up and use the microphone to ask a question, we ask you to please sign this release waiver here on the table before you speak. And this gives us permission to record you. Also, please, they ask no recording of your own and no photography. Okay. Do we have any birthdays? Anyone in the group? Brian? Yay. Awesome. How many years? Okay, Brian has a year. Okay. Do we have any returnees or newcomers here? Yeah, welcome. Any other returnees or newcomers? Okay, well, welcome everyone here. And we'll go ahead and get started. I wrote a little introduction. Oh, I'm sorry. That's fine. Okay. I wrote a little introduction in case someone was going to introduce me, and nobody's here to introduce me except me, so I'm going to read it. Okay, but I'll put it in the first person. While facing a number of medical challenges, I have remained abstinent for 13 years through the grace of my higher power, finding in each of those challenges a new opportunity to be of service to the CHOW Fellowship one day at a time. And that's really where I'm coming from. Why I felt it necessary, not necessary, but I really wanted to do this workshop on medical abstinence, and it seemed very appropriate that special needs will fit right in there, because we all have special needs. Each one of us does. And and I was amazed just talking to people, just saying, you know, oh, I was going to do this workshop, and they're like, oh, I'm on medical abstinence. You know, it's like, wow, who knew? So there's apparently a lot of people out there who do some form of medical abstinence. Now, they have updated the information in the last few years, so that the most current information is in the newest Forever Abstinent. And the newest one, they have it for sale at the literature table. It was revised last year. So this will be the last revision for two more years, because they decided they're not going to revise it every year. They're just going to wait 2 to 3 years, depending on how many proposals come in to make those changes. And those changes are made by the World Service Business Conference. So I'll be quoting from this. And because it's copyrighted, I couldn't make copies to hand out. So everybody go buy your new one. So it's really good to have.
What's the last date on it, the last revision? 7/16
was the last revision.
7/16, thank you.
And it was printed this April, so it's really new, fresh off the press. Okay. There is a good description of medical abstinence here. I'm going to go ahead and read this as it stands here. Some CHOW members have medical conditions that involve specific dietary requirements. The CHOW food plan can be adapted to accommodate specific medical conditions, but changes must come from a medical professional who understands the addictive nature of the disease. In addition, all changes must be consistent with the CHOP program, including weighing and measuring all food and sustaining from flour, sugar, and quantity. If modifications are made, they must be written down by a medical professional, discussed with a CHOP sponsor, and followed as directed. And there's very specific information it does ask for. Now, if you show your food plan, when you start out in the program, they recommend that we take this to our physician, our healthcare provider, have them approve or suggest whatever might be a little bit different. So there's a place for the healthcare professional to sign that the food plan is approved as is. And that says, okay, the doc says, do it as it's written. But there's a place below that, it says food plan needs medical modifications. And there are four spaces to write in those modifications. And then the doctor signs and dates it. And this, we make a copy, give it to our sponsor. And this is gives us accountability that we, our doctor said we need to do this, so it's not optional for us not to do it until the doctor changes it. I use the word doctor generically. So it's any healthcare provider. And if you feel, you know, say, whatever was the problem, and you feel, oh, I'm recovering from this, I think I can go back to the regular food plan, then you go back to your doctor and have your healthcare provider review it and discuss it, and then maybe re-sign one of these that, oh, you can go back to doing it as approved and date it. So that's how it's officially done. That pretty much explains, in a nutshell, what it is. Now, I wrote a few frequently asked questions, and some of these may sound strange, but they answer a lot of questions they have for me, and I know for other folks, about medical abstinence. I just explained what it was, pretty much. It's when you have a need to modify, generally it's modifying the pattern of eating. The important thing is we eat what is on the food plan. I've been on medical abstinence officially for 11 years. And my pattern started out a little bit differently, and it's kind of evolved to what it is today. But what it is today is what it's been for 11 years. And that's not going to change because of my medical issues. But the important thing is we still abstain from sugar, flour, and quantity. I need to share what I do so that you understand where I'm coming from, and it's a good example of doing what it says exactly, except my timing is different. I have blood sugar issues, and I also have intestinal issues. I've had four major abdominal surgeries, because of the results of all that and the aftermath, I have to eat five times a day, but I have to eat equal-sized meals. You know, I can't just have take a protein from one meal and have it in between. I have to eat small meals, and that's what accommodates me, and that's what gets me through without problems. So I eat a normal breakfast just like everybody else. You know, what's on the food plan in the amounts that I'm supposed to eat, and the kinds of foods that are my choice. Within those food groups. Now, for lunch, I take my lunch and I plan my lunch, but I cut it right down the middle. I have half a protein, half my vegetables, half if I'm having a fat, I do a fat. And with the other half, I may have my grain with that one. Now, I am on abstinence, so I do get a grain with lunch. And but just as an, you know, just to demonstrate that I eat normally like everybody else would on maintenance, just that I eat more often. And some people think, you know, oh, that's really a trigger, because if I eat more often, then I'll be thinking about food all the time. I really wish that I could eat my breakfast and go about my business for 4 or 5 hours and then have my lunch and then go about my business. I can't. I have to make sure that I have my next meal with me no matter where I go. You know, so a lot of my meals have become very portable. But it's what works for me, and it's exactly as it needs to be on the food plan. I'm eating the same amounts that everybody eats. I'm eating the same foods everyone eats, and I'm just eating at different times. So if you see me sitting in somewhere at the middle of the day and I'm eating something, it's okay. My higher power says that's okay, because that works for me. So, you know, I feel badly that someone might be triggered, but, you know, I have to do what I have to do to take care of me, and that's all we can do. So, now, if a doctor wants to, or a medical professional wants to add different foods, you know, oh, I want you to take protein powder or this, that, or the other thing, they're not on the food plan. I've had, prospective sponsees come to me and say, oh, I'm going to this nutritionist, and she said, I need this, 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 and this. I have to say, I'm sorry, I can't sponsor you, because you're not doing the See How food plan. The sponsee needs to be willing to do it. Now, my sponsor is not on medical abstinence, but she's willing to accept what I do. She's seen my instructions from my physician. I commit to her 5 meals every day. So I, it's like, okay, I just talk real fast so it doesn't take up any more time than anybody else would when I'm giving her my food every morning. But she accepts it. And if I have to make a change, and what's funny is she listens, because I hear her say, what about this? Oh, that's this. I've changed the kind of food, and then if I am having one kind that weighs differently, I report that to her too. But everything is according to the See How food plan, and this, like I said, this works for me. And the important thing too is, I'm not doing this alone. My medical professional, and then when I go to a new doctor, I take my food plan and the changes that I'm currently on and say, does this agree with you? And generally they'll say, this is awesome. This is the way everybody should eat. That's pretty much what everybody says, you know, and then they sign that one and I take that one in. So one of my issues is, every so often, I end up in the hospital. And when I do, it's usually because I'm sharing this only because it explains with a bowel obstruction. And I'm not allowed to eat or drink anything. I usually, you know, for maybe days, the last time it was for 2 weeks. You know, and it's like, you know, you're not allowed to skip a meal. You know, that's a slip. No, this is my physician saying, you're not eating or drinking anything until we tell you you can. You know, so when you're in the hospital, it's a different story. But when I do start eating and drinking, I went through major surgery last November. And once I was out of, you know, off the IVs, and it was for a different thing, it was a different surgery, and I was allowed to start eating normally. And, you know, if you order a menu, a diet from the kitchen, they just send you whatever. I went through, I just about had, you know, a panic attack, because I was like, I have to have my abstinent food. So I went, I said, you know, I want to talk to the dietitian. So she finally, someone came and they said, oh, we have a process here at this hospital where all you do is you call this number, and that is the dietitian downstairs, and you order exactly what you want. So I called down, and because I eat half meals, I ordered 2 ounces of a protein. I ordered 4 ounces of one vegetable, 4 ounces of another vegetable, and I didn't look at their menu. I just said, this is what I want. And I want a piece of fruit. I want, you know, whatever. And nothing with sugar. And nothing with flour. But I told, and they sent me, guess what? Exactly what I ordered. They even sent a printout that said how much of everything there was and what it was. And I was like, wow. So, you know, and I was in that hospital for 5 days. It was perfect. Now, I did have, you know, my daughter and my husband did bring me a few things from outside, like my grains. And because they had some grain, but not a lot to choose from. But I was able to maintain my abstinence. Of course, this is all through the grace of my higher power. Even being in that hospital, being there at that time, having that doctor. I mean, it was out of town for me. I was in California in the hospital, and I live in Arizona. But, you know, my higher power, who I call God, put me there at that time in that place so that I got the best care that I could have possibly had anywhere. And I was okay with it. I wasn't even apprehensive. I had had an accident. They discovered something. I had to have surgery. And so, you know, but I stayed abstinent. Like I said, it was only through the grace of God. And, you know, any other times I've been in the hospital, I do the same thing. I have a friend in program who just came out of the hospital, the same hospital that I from back home, and he said, well, I just really couldn't stay abstinent because, and I'm like, okay, he's not my sponsee, I can't say a word. I was in the same hospital and I stayed abstinent because I asked. I spoke up. I had to take care of me, and that's the important thing. I come first. You know, I stomp my feet. And you know what was really interesting? In any place I go like that, I start talking to the dietitian. I made friends with the one dietitian. You know, we became good buddies. And today, you know, I run into her every once in a while back home, and it's like, hi, how you doing? You know, and I got to 12-step the dietitians. And it's like, wow. You know, and I carried my little cards, you know, and I was passing out cards. But I got to 12-step them. I got to explain what I do. Thank you. And it was totally awesome. So that was a service that I got to do while I was there. And then when I come out here, I get to share that. That's another service. I get to, the best part for me is being able to share my experience while I was ill. You know, how God put me in the right place at the right time. I mean, when I think about it, I get goosebumps because it is so awesome. I mean, we're talking brain surgery. I know I'm not the only person to ever have brain surgery, but for me, that was a big deal, and it was a big impact on my life, and it's actually why I'm able to stand here and talk today. So God is good. He wants me to share this. He wants me to share this program and to be here to continue sharing and to continue to be abstinent. You know, I plan to be abstinent the rest of my life. Early on, you know, I started developing. I have more illnesses now than I ever had before I became abstinent. My problems before this were weight-related. And you know, I was like, I'm going to be in the fashion show, so you'll see who I was before. And those were my problems, not being able to bend down and tie my shoes. Excuse me. I was short of breath all the time. Well, you know, no wonder when you're 220 and trying to move around, and it's tough. It was tough for me. I got short legs. And So, abstinence has been such a godsend, such a blessing. And I'm just so grateful that I was brought to this program and able to do it one day at a time. And I will do what my doctor tells me. And it's something that as long as I take care of me with the help of and support of the fellowship. It's so good to see you all here. It's so awesome. And I do, let me see if I missed anything. I think that's everything. The Forever Abstinent book is for sale at the literature table, and it's good to always have the newest one. I have somebody who says, oh, I have one from 1998, and I'm like, no, I don't think so. So we welcome you all. I'd like to now introduce Suzanne. Paula? Okay, sorry. Paula N., who will speak to you next, and I thank you all for listening.
Hi, you guys. I'm Paula Ann. Very definitely a compulsive eater. Hi, guys. By the grace of God, my abstinence date is March 10th of 2010. I'm maintaining about an 80-pound weight release. Food is my number one drug of choice, and I definitely need to be here. And I am... Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. Oh, okay. Anyway, I am bipolar, and I also have Parkinson's. And I just want to give people hope that it is possible to stay abstinent even if you do have a disability. And I've been very fortunate to have really good sponsors, and I'm just so grateful for this program. And it's just definitely been a God deal. And with a bipolar, I've been diagnosed with bipolar disorder since I was 27. I'm 60 now, and I've been on meds ever since. And it's been a godsend. And some of my worst behaviors were before I got on meds. And one of the symptoms of bipolar disorder is really bad anger. I mean, bad, even to the point of violence. And I'm just very grateful for my meds because now I can be a nice person. I was not a nice person before that. I thought I was a mean person. And then it made me hate myself, and then I would overeat because I felt guilty about my actions, because my behaviors were not ethical. And I felt really guilty about the way I treated people, and I treated people pretty badly back then. And I've been up and down the scale. I was absent or maintained about a 40-pound weight release back in the early 80s, but I was just nuts. And I suspected something was wrong with me psychiatrically, but I didn't know it. And then I did wind up in the hospital and was diagnosed. But ever since then, I've been up and down the scale until I came in to another 12-step program for food addiction, what we have in the Houston area. And I did lose my weight there, but because of CHOW and the phone bridge meetings, I've been able to maintain my weight. And that, to me, is a major miracle. And obesity is a big problem in my family. My dad is the one that raised me. And when he died at the age of 62, he was 5'8" and 315 pounds. And, I mean, he just literally ate himself to death. And my mother did suicide at the age of 36. She had a slight weight problem, not a pretty bad one. But my stepmom said that my dad's death was a slow suicide. And it's true. You know, he did eat himself to death. And but one of the things about one of the most important medicines that I do take for my bipolar disorder, and it's a very important medicine that I take for it, but it causes hunger and weight gain. So I have to drink lots of fluids so that you know, I'm not hungry in between meals, and that helps a whole lot. And it's worth it because it keeps my behavior in check. And I'd rather be a little bit hungry and have ethical behavior than not. And I guess what I'm trying to say is, you know, it's like it says in the big book, our liquor was but a symptom or something like that. And for me, you know, it's not just the food, it's the emotions. And when I was having a really bad time with my meds, they had to take me off one of the most important meds I was on. This is about 20 years ago. My behavior got really bad, and I got up to a size 2X. I mean, I was, thank you. And I was huge, and my behavior was very unethical, and then I would overeat to deal with that. So then when they finally put me on a new medicine for that, it helped me with my behavior, and it helped my family relationships. They're so much better. And then when I did get into recovery for my food addiction, I'm trying to think. When I did get into recovery for my food addiction, after about a year of being in that program, because I didn't know about CHOW then, I had to go through the diagnosis for my Parkinson's disorder. And I thought that my tremors were just a side effect of my psychiatric meds. And then my psychiatrist said he wanted me to go to a neurologist and get checked out for Parkinson's, and that really scared me. And so I went to the neurologist, and I was shaking so bad. And it turned out that two of the psychiatric medicines that I was on caused tremors as a side effect. So the neurologist didn't know, was it the psychiatric meds making me have the tremors, or was it really Parkinson's? So I had to go off those two meds for 2 weeks, and I was just a basket case, and I was never wanting to overeat so bad in my life. And like one of my friends said, oh yeah, so you have to go off two of your most important meds for 2 weeks to find out. And oh, by the way, you might have Parkinson's. And it was really hard. And then I was abstinent in that program. It's similar to this program, but not quite the same, the abstinence. But I was abstinent in there for almost a year at the time. And then during that two-week period of wondering, do I have Parkinson's or not, and being terrified to death that I might have it, I thought, well, screw it. I'm going to the store. I told my husband, I'm going to the store, and I'm getting a can of my favorite binge food. Screw it. And then he said, well, you can't because Chris, our son, took your car to go to work. So, you know, God was really watching out for me then. He really was. And so, you know, I wasn't able to do that. And I'm really grateful. And then also, the sponsor that I had, and even though this was another 12-step program for food addiction in Houston, she also is in CHOW. Anyway, she wanted me to do the questions, you know, do a question a day in that program. And I kept wanting to talk about my Parkinson's, you know, oh, well, I've got, and I was diagnosed with Parkinson's. And I was, kept talking about, well, I've got the Parkinson's, and I was really into self-pity about it. And wanting to talk about that, not wanting to do the questions. And then she finally said, after about, you know, a few days of it, she finally said, well, I hate to tell you this, but the solution is in the questions, is in answering the questions. and she was right. And I just wanted to reach out through the phone line and choke her. I was so mad. And so what it did was it forced me to work on my depression and self-pity. And it made me realize that every day is important and that all I have is today. And so it made me appreciate life. And then later on, I had thanked her for that. And she said, well, she goes, I only give you 3 days of self-pity. That's all you get. And so, you know, she was right. And I was, you know, really glad that, you know, that she had said that. And she has over 20 years of abstinence. And she works a really strong program. And she's the one that told me about the phone bridge meetings. And I've been in CEHO ever since March of, you know, 2010. And thank you. And I'm really grateful for that. And then with the Parkinson's, it was difficult for me to eat, especially if I would eat out. My tremors were mostly on my right side, and I am right-handed. And so I'd have to eat with my left hand because the tremors weren't as bad with my left hand. And so that was difficult. And of course, I would put my makeup on with my left hand. And that was strange, but somehow I was able to do that. And I couldn't write. My tremors were so bad, I couldn't write. And anyway, but about 4 years ago, I had the brain surgery for Parkinson's. And I'm so grateful for it. And my neurologist talked to me about it for about a year before I finally did it. Because, you know, I didn't want just anybody messing with my brain. and it was definitely a God deal. And the surgeon that did it has done more of those kind of surgeries than anybody in the world. And he was really humble. And he's just a real sweetheart. And that made me feel relaxed enough and to trust him. And so now... I have an implant right here on my chest, and I charge this battery thing every morning for about an hour and 40 minutes. You can get the kind of battery where you don't have to charge it, and next time I'll do that when this one needs to be replaced. But I charge my battery with that, and now I don't have the shakes. It keeps me from shaking. And it's so neat. It's such a God deal, and it's worth it. And even though I did have to have my head shaved for the surgery, I'm vain. You know, I didn't want to, you know, go through that. It was worth it. My hair did grow back, and it was worth it. And I'm really grateful for that. And not everybody is a candidate for this type of surgery, but I'm really grateful to God that I was a good candidate for it. And as far as medical abstinence goes, I do have to, I only eat my grains at lunchtime. I have 2 grains at lunch. I don't eat grains any other time, because when you take calcium, it interferes. I mean, when you eat whole grains and particularly wheat, it interferes with the absorption of calcium. And so I take my calcium with my dinner meal and my other supplements. And that way I'm not interfering with the absorption of calcium. And I did have to get off caffeine. I've been off caffeine a little bit over a year now, thank God, which was a major miracle. And because I have osteoporosis, I have it in my right hip, and I almost have it in my back. And so I have to keep my bones strong, and now I do exercise. And that's something good, because before I wasn't good enough to my body enough to exercise. And also, I'm just really grateful for this program. And it's really worth it. And I just feel like if I can, I just want to give people hope that, you know, it is possible to be abstinent regardless of, medical conditions or life conditions. You know, life isn't always easy. And I just want people to know that it is possible to stay abstinent. And I'm just ever so grateful for my sponsor who wouldn't let me stay in self-pity about the Parkinson's and the bipolar disorder. And also, I am on one medicine for anxiety because my anxiety was, we did marriage counseling, my husband and I, and my anxiety was so bad that it would come out as, well, I would be, pardon my language, but I would be real bitchy to my husband. And I would get scared. Well, then if I get like that, if I treat people bad, it makes me feel guilty, then I want to overeat. And so if in order to stay absent, I have to treat people ethically. And I can only do that with God's help. But when he recommended a medicine for anxiety that is non-addictive, it's not like Xanax or Valium, nothing like that. Oh, okay, great. Anyway, but it is for anxiety, and he recommended that I get on that. And I, because he said that my anxiety was, my bitchiness was interfering with my behavior towards my husband, because I would, when I would get anxious, I would pick a fight with him. And that's not conducive to marriage. Anyway, I noticed after being on that medicine for about a year that I hadn't cussed my husband out. I thought, my God, this is a major miracle. And I know he's so grateful that I am on that medicine. And it just, what really showed to me, it really proved to me that my anger is fear. And the neat thing, too, about the medicine.
Okay, good morning, everybody. Good morning. I'm Suzanne, and I'm a grateful compulsive eater, and I want to thank Paula, Ann, and Jan. And let's see, I'm from Los Angeles, and as Jan is from Arizona, and Paula's from Texas, just to let everybody know we're from all over the place. I have been abstinent in this program since April 6th of 2003, and for most of that time, I've been on a medical abstinence. And I also would like to say Paula and I are currently on the Special Needs Accessibility Committee. We do have one. And Jan was in the past a member of our committee. And we really felt the need for this workshop for a number of reasons. So I'm on medical abstinence, but I also have special needs. I've been totally blind since 1998, May 1st, to be exact. And when I came into this program, I knew I was going to have a challenge because I knew there was a lot of writing involved and I can't no longer write. I can write, but no one can read my writing. Only my higher power can. And my mom worked very hard, like, practice your signature, you can do better. And every time I sign my name now, I think of my mom. I can hear her saying, you can do better. And so working this program was a challenge. My first sponsor helped me. My mom at the time read a lot to me when she could. She had had heart surgery, and I was actually, right after I lost my eyesight, my mom had emergency heart surgery, and I ended up caring for her newly blind. And my first thought was when the doctor said that I was going to be blind the rest of my life, probably. My first thought was, how am I going to care for my mom when she's older? And my second thought was, I'll never get married. Well, I took care of my mom for 12 years. Very well, thank you. And I'm getting married November 11th. And that's thanks to this program. It really is in my higher power. I don't think I'd be, I would never have been ready. And I'm very grateful I never got married when I was younger. It would not have lasted. I know that. I was not ready, and now I am. It took a while. So those were my two thoughts, and I did. I'm doing those two things. I did them, and I'm doing them. So I came to this program. My first sponsor helped me with the writing and the reading, and my mom did too at that time. It took me 90 days to do the first 30-day questions. And, you know, I have to say my first sponsor was a very no-nonsense lawyer-type person. And I was afraid that she would say, if you don't do a question a day, I'm kicking you to the curb. But she didn't. She said, it doesn't matter if you take 180 days. As long as you're calling me every day and you're working your program and you're working on yourself and your question, that's what it is. And so I'm grateful for her for that. And she left, and I looked for another sponsor, and I had to sponsor myself kind of for a while, but I did have someone to call my food in every day. I did do that, and I would call someone and say, would you be my sponsor? And they'd say, who are you? And they'd say, I said, you know what, that's okay. That's okay. And I remember I asked someone to be my sponsor, and they said, yeah, I'll be available. Yeah, I'd love to sponsor you, but in 2 months, because I'm working on this, whatever it was. And I said, okay. And a friend of mine said, Sue, she might be the most wonderful sponsor in the world, but she's not available. You need a sponsor now. And I said, okay. And thank God, even at that point, early in my career here, I had the willingness to listen, because I already had suffered enough, I thought. And so three people, separately, unbeknownst to each other, offered me the name of someone. And I called this person. And I said, you don't know me, but I'm looking for a sponsor. And she said, oh, yeah. Before I even was finished, I said, would you? She said, I'd love to sponsor you. And she's still my sponsor today. And it's been a little more than 13 years. And so, however, she's also dyslexic. So here I'm blind and she's dyslexic. So that created a problem. So different people along the way would do a couple of recordings with the questions and the readings. However, sometimes half the reading would be gone, or some of the questions would be gone, or the question wasn't complete. So this was a long process. Finally, a friend of mine said he would help me, and he actually, I think he did a marathon of 36 hours of straight recording, did steps 1 through 12, 100 slip questions, and the Forever Abstinent booklet on CD for me. And that enabled me to finish my first 12 steps. Once I had those CDs, I finished them rather quickly. And I remember when I stood up and as a step sponsor, one of my sponsees and her sponsee joked, like, it only took you 10 years. Hey, but you know what? I did it. I have 10 minutes? 15, okay. It didn't take 10 years, but it took a long time. But you know what? I had the persistence to stay, and I wasn't going to give up. So why I wanted to share about medical abstinence and special needs is that, you know, I want to backtrack a little bit. I became an intergroup rep a few months after my mom passed away. A friend of mine on the phone bridge said, darling, you're our new phone bridge intergroup rep. And I said, are you talking to me? She said, yep, darling, you're our new intergroup rep. She did not ask me. And that's how I became an intergroup rep, right? And I would never have done it. I did not think I could do it because it wouldn't have been perfect. But I've learned here I don't have to be perfect. You know, I don't have to be. So, and I share sometimes at a meeting, obviously at a face-to-face meeting, I think people figure that one out. Some people don't. But that's okay. Then I'm blind, right? Totally blind. But on the phone bridge, I do share it at times. I don't always share it. I don't feel the need to share it. But she said to me, you know, you don't have to tell anybody that you're blind on the phone bridge. And I said, you know why I do that sometimes? If I can be an example of here I am blind, working my program, I'm not leading a meeting perfectly, but I'm willing to do it, it might encourage someone to step up whatever their challenge is, whatever it is, that they can do it too. And that's why I share that. I've had the honor and privilege of sponsoring a few people who have had medical abstinence and special needs, and some of them both at the same time. I sponsored a beautiful young woman who came into our program by way of Googling compulsive eating. Someone had planted the seed that there might be a program that had structure and discipline and a food plan. She'd had tried something else and not worked, and she got on her computer and after, I don't know, an hour, found our program, got on the phone bridge, and someone told her to call me, and I sponsored her. And at the time, I didn't think I needed any more sponsees, but I felt compelled to do so. And she had cerebral palsy. She was also legally blind. She didn't have a lot of sight. She was also very, very low income, and she said to me, I just went grocery shopping and I have all the wrong food. And I said, well, you want to call me back when you don't have those foods anymore? She said, what could I do? I don't want to eat them. I want to work the program. I said, you could try going back to the grocery store and returning it. Now, I did not think I would hear from her for a week, 2 weeks. To my amazement, she called me back. I think it was the next night. She had someone help her take back. I think they took back 90% of the groceries. And she gave the other 10% to her mother. She was willing. And I worked with her for 4 years. She also was diagnosed with Lou Gehrig's disease, and she passed away. It'll be 2 years in April. And I learned so much from her, dignity and grace. She sponsored until about 2 weeks before she passed away. The last time I spoke to her 2 days before she passed away. She loved this program, and she really believed in it, and it gave her a lot of peace and serenity. And she also had some cognitive and emotional issues. And because of this program, she had lost custody of her daughter. And because of this program, her mother asked her to move back in with her and be a part of her life and her daughter's life. So she was able to pass away with her family. Now, why I share that is because I think it's important. She was willing to work her program and don't go to any lengths. So there were times she couldn't see and could not hold a book. So I did give her a copy of Step 6 through 12 on CD, only for her. Sometimes she had to verbally answer the question over the phone. She was unable to write at times. There were times she lost her voice completely. She could not speak. And she had an iPad. She had some sort of electronic device that would allow her to electronically speak. But she still called me every day, even though she could not speak herself. And that was for a couple of months. When she went to the hospital, she was able to maintain her medical abstinence. So I just want to share that we, you know, sometimes we have quality problems, and then some of us have other deeper problems, but I have the willingness and the love to work this program. And like I said, she did sponsor. She sponsored almost to the end. And she actually took on a new sponsee a couple of months before she passed away. So that's that. I have had different types of medical abstinence. The other reason why I wanted to share about medical abstinence is someone who feels very strongly passionate about medical abstinence asked me to share this. I believe it's on one of the phone lists somewhere. There are people that actually write, will not sponsor medical abstinence. And I'm here to say medical abstinence that doesn't mean they're eating sugar and flour in quantity. They just may be doing it a little different. Then maybe it's in the Forever Abstinent booklet. As long as they stick to the guidelines, sugar, flour, and quantity. And they get permission, written statement from their doctor. And I remember when I first came into program, people were ashamed to say they're on medical abstinence. And they had good reason to be on medical abstinence. Now, I also can say in the past, I had a sponsee, which came to me. She said, I'm on medical abstinence. I will bring you a note from my doctor, but I have to tell you, my first medical abstinence, I lied to my sponsor. I said, I'm glad you're being honest with me. So yes, maybe someone might do that. But for the most part, there are some people who really, truly need a medical abstinence. I also have had a few surgeries, and I did it abstinently. I spoke to my doctor about it before the surgery. I spoke to the nutritionist before the surgery. After one of my surgeries, I was on liquid food. I was not allowed, it wasn't my choice, not allowed to eat solid food for 2 months. I had to eat a higher amount of protein so I would heal. And I went around and around with my doctor, and he said, don't argue with me. I respect your program, but you have to do this. Don't argue with me. And he said, because he knew about the food plan. I said, okay, fine. My sponsor said, do as the doctor tells you. So I did that, and when I was in the hospital, I would have the nurse read the ingredients because I'm unable to. And, you know, at first, it's funny, I have 12 steps, some of the nurses in that hospital. My mom was like a frequent visitor to that hospital, maybe a couple times a year, and I'd always order abstinent food from my mother because she wanted it. And they'd ask me, what are you doing? So this, you know, the one nurse, she'd read me the ingredients. But the second day after my surgery, my friend was visiting me. And they brought my liquid food. And I asked, the nurse said, yeah, it's all what you said. My friend picks everything up. She said, yeah, this is right, this is right. The last thing, sugar was the second ingredient. So we threw that out. But I was able to do it because I planned. You know, I didn't want to stress over it, but I did plan. I did have a little argument with my doctor. I am very stubborn and willful. That's what got me here. But it worked out. It really worked out. And then I was transitioned into solid food. First it was blended food, and then it was solid food. So there was a transition period as well. I would really encourage anyone, please don't be afraid to sponsor someone in medical abstinence. You do not have to have medical abstinence to sponsor. It's helpful, but if you need a sponsor, and if someone's willing to sponsor you, that's not a requirement. It really is not a requirement. Special needs. I am very lucky that my sponsor had patience. She did not kick me to the curb because it took me so long to do my work. But I will tell you, I still sponsored. I call my sponsor every day. I do keep a record of my food. I did service before I was drafted into service by my good friend. I did other types of service from the beginning. I do my literature and writing. Even when there are days I couldn't do the quote-unquote the question, I do journal every day. And I make a gratitudes list every day. And I do a 10-step every day. And that is really important. So if the person is willing to work their program, sometimes you have to think outside the box, right? At least I do. And so if someone has some issues, there is a special needs committee. The information is on the website. You go to cahow.org, and there is a page. I think it's a special needs / accessibility. We have our own page, and you'll find some names and numbers of people to call in case you need or have a question.
5 minutes.
Thank you. Also, I felt compelled to really make our literature, or at least have someone make our literature accessible. And that's another reason why someone asked me to become a delegate a few years ago. There was no special needs committee. So now there is, and if someone needs it in Braille, they have sponsor guidelines, the Forever Abstinent booklet in Braille. Also have it in large print. And it could be available in Spanish as well, but that would it was upon request. And if someone needs other literature in large print, it can be done. So I encourage everyone to leave here and think about, can I sponsor someone with medical abstinence? Now with more information, can I sponsor someone that may have to work their program a little differently? Maybe they're unable to write, but maybe they can record it. However the case may be, if someone is willing to work it, please be willing to work it with them and don't be afraid. Yet I think sometimes we're afraid of the unknown, but here I've been taught it's okay to have a little bit of fear as long as I walk through them. I just really encourage everybody. We will have time for questions if anybody has any questions about medical abstinence, special needs. I know that the other reason that I really wanted to have our literature accessible is I really want to take the message to the blind community. As a compulsive eater, and I identify first and foremost as a compulsive eater over being blind. I really do. But in the blind community, they already feel they're not part of, and I can definitely understand that. And as a compulsive eater, and there are many, many, many blind people who are obese, it's a double whammy. And I remember when I went blind, I'm thinking, okay, now I'm a compulsive eater and I'm blind. Wow. But you know what? It's a gift. I don't look at it as something bad. It's just, you know what? God gave this to me and I'm rolling with it. I'm living life. And that's what this program has given me, is a life that I'm able to live and be happy, joyous, and free, and share it with someone else. Because if it weren't for this program, I would not be getting married. Trust me. Because I did not know how to be a girlfriend. And I'm thinking, I didn't know how to be a caregiver. I was a caretaker, but I later learned I was a caregiver, although I probably was a caretaker as well. But that's another story for another day. But I learned how to accept that I need to learn, and it's okay, and to walk through it, and communicate. This program has taught me to communicate better. So if you're new or you're returning and you have a medical issue, you can do this program. You can do this program in a hospital. We've had members who have lived in nursing homes and have worked this program and sponsored while in a nursing home and had their abstinent meal in a nursing home. And if they can do that, I can do it. I can. I can walk and I can still talk, at least for today, and I can still hear for today. It's funny, I used to order a cab and the lady would get confused between deaf and blind. She's like, yeah, you're the deaf lady. I'm like, yep, I'm deaf and blind. How did you know? I'm working on it. But you know what, for today, for today, I'm not deaf at least. I've taken the fat out of my ears and I can listen, you know, and I can listen to my sponsor. I remember shortly after my mom died, she gave me direction to do some writing and I didn't want to do it. I thought it was too soon, and it was something along the lines, I don't remember exactly, all the things I'd given up for taking care of my mom. And I thought it was too soon, and it was, that's awful to look at it that way. So I prayed about, see, here I've learned, I need to listen. It doesn't always mean that I have to do it, but I need to weigh and measure what comes out of my mouth. I need to weigh and measure what goes in my ears. I cannot reject it. I just can't say, I don't want to hear it. No, I had to listen, and I reflected, and I prayed, and I said, can I change one word? I forgot what it was. She said, absolutely. I needed to do that writing. I'm glad I was taught to listen, and I was glad and happy that I had the willingness. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Suzanne. Thank you, Paula. We have let's try maybe 10 minutes. That'll take us a few minutes over our official quitting time, but let's take about 10 minutes for questions. If anybody has a question, we ask you to sign the release form, and then that microphone, I assume, is working. If not, we'll hand you this one. Yeah. It's working.
My question is for Paula. Paula, when you eat sugar, does it affect your disorder even though you're on meds?
Well, I mean, I don't eat sugar now, but when I did, what I've noticed is that being abstinent helps with my depression. And so as long as I stay off the sugar, it really helps with my depression. And so that's another reason that I need to stay abstinent. Thanks.
Anything? Go ahead, David. Yeah, you need to sign and go over to the microphone. This is...
David, compulsive eater.
Hi, David.
Been on the program at Abstinence since June 22nd, the year 2000. And I just worked with these two ladies while we were on the conference, and both extraordinary. I'm glad that Suzanne was talking about how anybody can be a medical sponsor for a medical abstinence. I was very timid about that at first, but I listened to people say that over and over again, and now I do sponsor someone on a medical abstinence. And sometime, you know, when I first tried it, it was kind of fits and starts, and it was like I didn't get the signature in the book like it was supposed to, I didn't insist on it. They said that they had gotten a doctor's approval, but my mistake was not to insist on seeing the signature. And so this time I did it by the book. And so I have someone on medical absence calls me from Arizona at 6:45 every day. And he reads me his food and he reads me his question. And I ask him if he's grateful. And I said, you know, he says, I'm in medical absence. I said, all right, you have to take this to your doctor. So he's about 85 years old and he's in assisted living. And he went to his doctor. His daughter, who's also in the program, took him to the doctor and had the doctor told what, you know, what the requirements were, showed him the food plan, and signed it. And his daughter helped him send that by email, a fax or a female email. It was a copy of what the doctor had signed. And so now he does that, and I said, what the heck is this doctor going to prescribe for him, you know? And it turns out that all he was getting was some extra seeds and, you know, just a couple tablespoons of seeds, you know? And he seems to be fine with it all, and I'm fine with it. And I feel like I'm being more of service this way, you know, because I'm not limiting myself to just, you know, people who are on a regular abstinence. So it helps my abstinence, and I'm sure I'm helping him with his abstinence. So, like, just to repeat, you know, I was very nervous and anxious about sponsoring anybody on abstinence, but you learn as you go, you know, and sometimes you may make a mistake, but that's no reason not to sponsor someone on a medical abstinence. Thank you.
Thank you, David. Okay, we have time for one more question. Oh, yes. Going to have to, folks are chomping at the bit to take the room over. So I'd like to thank.
If they have any questions, they can ask any one of us later.
Okay. If anybody has any questions, please don't hesitate to come see us, any one of us later. And we thank you all for your kind attention and for participation. Very grateful. And thank you to our timer. Okay.
I don't know if it's going to be in this room.